Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. 50 years ago today, tens of thousands of Americans converged on Washington, D.C. It was billed as the Great March on Washington, and the purpose of it was to rally for jobs and freedom, for civil and economic rights. The site was the National Mall. The stage was the Lincoln Memorial, where Martin Luther King delivered what has come to be known as the I Have a Dream speech. It proved to be a seminal event in American civil rights history and is credited with having led to the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. I'm Don Marsh. On today's program, we'll remember that day and examine its impact, especially here in St. Louis. Joining me in studio is Billy Morrison. She is a retired St. Louis school teacher and was there that day 50 years ago, a young 14-year-old watching history in the making. Also in studio, attorney Chris Hexter. He was an active civil rights advocate in the 60s who participated in the Jefferson Bank demonstrations here in 1963 and also participated in Freedom Summer in 1964, helping to register black voters in Mississippi. I thank you both for being with us today. Nice to see you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Billy, I'm going to start with you because you were there. Tell me what you remember of that day a long time ago.
Well, the fact that I was even there was an accident. My dad paid for my mom to go. A friend came to the house to pay for my mom to go. She was known to do a lot of grassroots civil rights activities, helping people with welfare rights and that. And when they got there and found out she'd already been paid for, he said, take one of the kids. I happened to be hanging around only because this gentleman bought ice cream when he came. And I was going to get my ice cream. And when he turned around and saw me, he said, well, take her. So I got the chance to attend. At first, to me, you know, this is a trip with your mom, far away, nobody else. I was used to demonstrations. My mom had held sit-ins. We'd had picket lines. That part was not new to me. The fact that we were going to be in Washington, D.C., that was a whole new thing because I'd never traveled out of the city that far before.
So there you were in Washington, and along with about 250 or 300,000 other people. As a 14-year-old, did you have any real sense of what was going on?
Slightly. You know, I knew it was civil rights, and I knew that it was going to be a mixture of races and cultures there. One of my fears being that I heard people on the bus wondering, could that many people, especially people of color, get together without there being any violence, any problems? And, you know, I was worried about that, you know, and it wasn't until we started really getting close when we were in Maryland that I think the importance of it, because we went into a restaurant and the lady blatantly said they weren't going to serve us. She said they didn't serve colored people there. And, my mom was still on the bus. I had jumped off, and I'm standing there, and I know, do I go back to the bus? You know, do I stand there? And a gentleman who was on the bus ran in, and I don't know whether he was aware of what was going on, but he threw a $50 bill on the table and told the lady he wanted some ham and eggs quick, and I think she felt green overrode black and proceeded. That's the fastest service we ever had. And that's when I think it hit me. What was going on?
You said you had been to demonstrations before. Your family was involved in the Jefferson Bank demonstrations here.
Yeah, they gave me permission to go down there. Talking about an eighth grader who went after school on a regular bus, got off, and there were all these young people, mostly high school, college people, demonstrating outside the bank. Some were inside the bank. And one of my mom's friends, again, wanted to know, was I going to go inside or just march around? And I went inside. I sat right there in the doorway. And when the doors opened up, those people came in, and they didn't care that we were sitting there. They were kicking us in the back and pushing us around. And so I got arrested with the rest of them.
And Chris Hexter, that brings me to you. You were not in Washington that day. You were here because you were actively involved in the bank demonstrations.
Yes, it was. Yeah. I got involved in St. Louis Congress on Racial Equality. That summer, the first person I met at CORE on then Easton Avenue was Percy Green, who gave me a half-hour lecture on or discussion about everything going on in St. Louis civil rights. He was a fascinating man.
And still is.
And still is. And I've become very close with Percy. And the other person, that day at CORE was significant because it was the weekend. CORE always met on Sundays, and this was the Sunday after Medgar Evers' funeral in Mississippi, and a person who was active in CORE, then surgical nurse Lucian Richards, spoke, and he gave this just stemwinder of a speech about being in Mississippi at the funeral, and then related Mississippi to St. Louis, and he energized a then post-high school graduate going on to college kid, me. And I became very active in CORE that summer, focusing on banks in St. Louis. And ultimately, 2 days after the March on Washington, sat in at Jefferson Bank, which at that time had no black employees.
You spent a large part of the day, 50 years ago today, watching the rally in Washington.
From beginning to end. Uh-huh. I watched it on television and was awed by the speeches. And ironically, my father, who was a professor then at Washington U, I can remember John Lewis, who's now in Congress, and all the stuff around John Lewis, whose speech, as you read it today, is incredibly mild. But then there was all this palaver about what he was going to say and these fears that he was going to cause a rumpus. And there was all this stuff to X out various parts of his speech. But yes, I mean, the whole march was fascinating to me. Bayard Rustin, Asa Philip Randolph, all the characters up on the podium. And, it was an incredibly moving thing to watch.
You know, I'd like to go back to Percy Green now, because you have just mentioned him. I spoke with him yesterday, and we talked at length about the demonstrations, of which he was a big part, as you were. But what I was interested in finding out from him was what the March in Washington and that part of the civil rights movement did, the impact that it had here in St. Louis, and in particular on the Jefferson Bank demonstrations. And here's what he had to say.
I do think that many of the people, after having the experience there in Washington and the March on Washington and all, I think they did come back to the city with a great deal more energy. And I think the folks came back to their local communities in order to try to correct some of the wrongs in their own locale. And it just happened that we had a project in place. And so many of the students and some of the other folks that were highly energized came on and joined us, and we had a tremendous number of people on that first day of a direct action protest at the bank, which was that Friday, August the 30th of 1963.
Can you point to any of the projects that might have been energized that day in Washington?
Well, not offhand, but I think what happened, I think the voting, I think in some other places, many people were energized in terms of registering citizens in their particular area to come out and vote. But I think here in St. Louis, the mere fact that we had the Jefferson Bank situation in place, and it was overt. I mean, the bank could not say that they weren't discriminating, because it was black and it's a black and white issue. They just didn't have any blacks in place. And I think that the mere fact that they took the hardline position and they arrested some of our fine, outstanding citizens like Marion and Charlie Oldham, and I think Bill Clay at the time was an older person. I think that was just like throwing gasoline on the fire. The situation was brewing, and then, of course, when they did the arrest and held them responsible for the fine demonstration we had that Friday, I think it caused a vibration throughout the whole entire community, to the extent that a lot of people was excited as a result of this overt wrongdoing on behalf of the political administration, the Justice Department, and the whole entire downtown power structure, that it just triggered a lot of people to become involved.
How important was the March on Washington overall to the civil rights movement in general, in St. Louis and elsewhere?
Well, I think it gave many people hope. The mere fact that folks... See, a lot of time, many of these people were thinking the same thing about unjust. The people witnessed it, the injustice that was perpetrated upon them. And when all of the people come together, when all of them came together, then, of course, it was almost like saying, well, we all were saying the same thing. We all now can see that we weren't wrong about what we were visualizing and what we were feeling, that we had been discriminated against. An interesting dynamic, too, is that you had whites also realize the injustices that was being perpetrated against their black brothers and felt that there was a need for change. In other words, it was almost like a rejuvenating of the abolitionist group back during slavery, except this was a modern version of black and whites coming together and everything. And also keep in mind now, we had problems. All of this was coming off of the situations pertaining to the South and the voters' right issue. And the irony in all of this is that as it relates to voting, it looked like we have come full circle. Now you're having an effort on behalf of some of those in the powerful position, especially in politics, where the Republicans used to be friends of minorities, now have become the oppressor. And, of course, now we have a big problem with voters' rights and many of the cities and locales in the South. Especially, even though you have some of the same effort, in other words, denying minorities the right to vote in some of the northern cities.
That's Percy Green, civil rights, longtime civil rights activist here in St. Louis, talking about the impact of the March on Washington here during the course of the Jefferson Bank demonstrations, which went on for many weeks during 1963, basically dealing with the fact that there were so few, there were no black employees at Jefferson Bank, and that's something that they wanted to change and ultimately did. Billy Morrison, back to you. What do you think about Percy's comments there and what he said and the impact that the march had on life here in St. Louis?
You know, I really think by, especially since it got television coverage, because when I came back home, you know, everyone's like, well, I saw the march on Washington. I saw all those people there. I think it let blacks in St. Louis know we weren't in an isolated place, that we knew there were things that needed to be changed, that we knew there were methods and tactics that we could then use to make those changes, and that we weren't alone. This was going on all over the country. We weren't the only ones who were aware of it. And if we needed additional help or information, we now had a network for those people who may not have been active in anything. They now realize there's a network out there, and we can call on these people. And we can get help.
And Chris Hexter, that network included a lot of whites. There are about one-third of the 300,000 in Washington that day were white. You are. And the Oldhams that were mentioned by Percy Green were. And many others. That network really was taking a multicolored shape, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, I can talk about St. Louis and Washington. First of all, I mean, visually, I mean, just to think about looking at the television, here was it was a hot day in Washington. And you
not
had,
as hot as it often is. It was 85 degrees, and I've been in Washington it's like today here. Yeah.
But you had people stretched. I mean, just visually, you had the cameras up on the Lincoln Memorial and then just stretching down the tidal pools. And it was just wall to wall, and you had people up in trees. And then you had this visual image in the morning as the march was just beginning of all these buses and trains converging on the Capitol. So it was just this awe-inspiring thing to watch. And then, you know, I know that there's been a lot of publicity about the fears of violence, and there was talk that morning of it. But it was just an incredibly uplifting moment. And so, yes, there were lots of whites. And then in St. Louis, in core, I mean, Marion and Charles Oldham were an interracial couple. Marion's black, Charles was white. There were Dick Daley, white, who had sat in with Percy Green that summer at the Arch because there was zero black employment at the Arch. And I think the thing I got out of it was that there was a tremendous amount of goodwill. I mean, Percy is a good example. I mean, he just reached out to me and was very open and inviting. And so I think there was just an arm-in-arm sensibility about people getting involved in the movement. And it was, again, across racial lines, across religious lines.
It gave people hope. As Billy has said and as Percy has said, it gave folks here hope that there could be change. I have to take a break now. We'll come back and continue our conversation in just a moment. We're obviously doing a retrospective on the March on Washington 50 years ago today, the I Have a Dream speech. With me in studio is Billy Morrison, a retired school teacher here in St. Louis who attended that march as a 14-year-old. And also with me in studio is Chris Hexter. He is an attorney locally, a Freedom Summer participant the following year, but he was very much involved in the Jefferson Bank demonstrations, which were taking place at the very time of the March on Washington. We'll be back in just a moment to continue the conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.
I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
Hello again and welcome back. Of course, that was a segment, a very famous segment from Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech at the National Mall in Washington, D.C. 50 years ago today. And that's what we're talking about with Billy Morrison, a retired St. Louis school teacher who was there that day. Chris Hexter is a local attorney, very active in the civil rights movement in the 60s. Both of these folks are with me in the studio. An interesting factoid with regard to what we just heard. Someone sent me a piece from the Washington Post that ran a couple of days ago. The Washington Post, the day after that I Have a Dream speech, only used the word dream once in the reportage. They totally ignored the King's speech. Imagine that. Imagine that. And they admitted that that was a great faux pas and that they really blew it by not doing that. Billy, back to you. As a longtime teacher in St. Louis, what do you tell your students? How do you teach that that day?
I lead up to it by letting them know that this, we're coming up on a time where you're going to hear a lot about Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And, of course, I ask them, what do they know? And the majority will say, he got shot. So it then becomes incumbent upon me to explain that prior to that event, he led this March on Washington. He had led other demonstrations, that he got involved after Rosa Parks and the bus problems they had down there, and that these are things, that ways that people use to change a wrong into a right. And even though primarily I taught first grade, they began to understand that, you know, there are other ways that you can make a difference besides going out here and having violence as such. And then I did use, you know, there was a movie made, a little cartoon about Dr. King's life. And I bring that in and I stop it because they have a lot of snippets of the dogs being released on the people, the hoses being turned on the people. And I stop that to explain to them, you know, this really happened. And then later I take them up to the library and get on the computer and show them.
Great.
Do you think the kids get it? Do you think those who are young and in their teens and maybe your early 20s get what this was all about and the importance of it?
I think the little ones, they don't get it right then, but I think as they go along educationally and they pick up on more and more of what, because they'll come back and say, oh, Miss Morrison, we learned this and you told us about this and you told us you were there. Then they ask, you know, better questions. I think when they get out of school, though, it really begins to hit them as they go to college, as they look for work, and they still find some things close to them.
Chris, what do you think? Think young people get it?
I think at a young age it's hard because I think it's a complex story. When I talk about Dr. King, I talk about three things. First, I talk about the fact that he wasn't a man standing alone, because I think it's very important to understand the civil rights movement was a movement. And he was part of a movement, and then without the people behind him, it wouldn't have happened. And I think that's critical to understand the movement. That's one thing. Two, I think he was a man about economics. He wasn't just, you know, wishy-washy, touch your shoulder, be lovey-dovey. He was a pusher. And within the black community, he was controversial. When he went to Birmingham, which is the big event before the March on Washington, where Bull Connor called out the dogs. A lot of the people in the Birmingham black community did not want King there. and particularly did not want King to pull out the students from schools, which became the sort of core of what that was about. So there was he was controversial, and I think we forget that he was controversial. And three, I think that he was important because he was a leader who had a projection about a vision about the world and how to convert that to politics.
Right. You know, many St. Louisans traveled to Washington by bus this past weekend to commemorate the 63 March. Leslie Broadnax helped organize that long bus journey from St. Louis, and we spoke with her earlier by phone, and I asked what motivated her about this this trip.
It actually stemmed from the verdict involving the Trayvon Martin matter. Reverend Al Sharpton had did several interviews asking for protests in 100 cities on the federal courthouse. So my business partner and I, we organized the rally here in St. Louis. It was quite successful with about 2,000 in attendance. And from there, we decided just to take it one step forward to get involved in the process, to inspire others, and to just be knowledgeable of not only history, but current events. And so from there, we decided to organize the bus trip.
Did you have any trouble rounding up people to travel with you?
We did not. You know, the enthusiasm once the information started to hit the local newspapers was outstanding. We promoted a lot on Facebook. We did a few radio interviews and things of that nature. And, in fact, when we departed that Friday morning, we had a wait list of about 13 individuals that we were not able to accommodate.
Oh, I'm sure they were disappointed.
Very disappointed.
Tell me about the time in Washington, the kinds of thoughts that you and perhaps some of the others might have shared with you about being there on this occasion.
You know, it was really overwhelming, and it was a feeling of anticipation, not really knowing what to expect, not really knowing, you know, what the crowds were going to be like, anticipating what the speeches were going to be like. But once we were there on the National Mall, it was all worth it, the hours and traveling and just the planning and the hard work leading up to. It was a very humbling experience. I'm relatively young. I'm just 36 years of age. And so while I've only read and seen documentaries about the civil rights movement, I think this was able to put it in perspective for me of just how blessed I am to benefit from that movement and from what others' hard work has done for me today.
Is that something that those traveling with you might have been talking about, the impact that that day 50 years ago had on people today?
Oh, of course. Of course, we did have that conversation on the bus because, in fact, one of the participants brought along a DVD of the original march and speech from 50 years ago. And so we were able to kind of do a comparison and contrast and analysis after watching that going to D.C. and then even coming back having participated in this march.
On a personal level, how do you think that all of that impacted you? You're a young woman, not even born when all of this was happening, and yet it must have had some impact on your life, your parents' lives.
It did. My mother actually took the trip with us. And so, yes, so I can remember the stories of her telling us when she was a young girl traveling down south of the segregated restrooms and rest stops and things of that nature. So for me, having participated, I think I left with two feelings. One, a feeling of inspiration, just wanting to be even more so involved than what I already am in the political process and in the uplifting of everyone. And then two, I came back with a sense of urgency that although we've come tremendously far, there's still a lot of issues that need to be addressed. And I've got a feeling of it needs to be done yesterday, so to speak.
So you're motivated in that sense, too, to maintain this momentum and perhaps even pick it up.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
But one final question. You're 36, I think you said.
Mm-hmm.
What about people younger than you? I'm thinking primarily of teenagers, maybe kids and their young people in their early 20s. Mm-hmm. Do you think they get it? Do you think they know what this was all about 50 years ago?
I don't think they really get it. I think, you know, it's an interesting generation. I think that they have been privy to so much. And then with the explosion of the tech world, I just don't know how much of it they really understand because for them, this, you know, technology is all that there is. For them, I think that their time period, it's more of an integration and more of diversity. So I don't really think that they know how we've gotten to that point and just take it for granted.
While there's still a lot of work to be done, I guess you're saying that they don't realize what was done before them to give them the opportunity to do the things they're doing today.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, Leslie, thank you so much for spending a couple of minutes with us. I know you had a very enjoyable trip, and we'll look forward to see what you do with that momentum we were just talking about.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
And that was Leslie Broadnext. She helped organize the rally here commemorating the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, and also helped organize a bus trip to Washington over the weekend to commemorate the 50th anniversary once again. Billy Morrison, I know that you were wanting to go on that most recent trip or were unable to do so, but you were still involved.
Yes. How so? I read about what Leslie and a friend of hers were trying to do, and I went up that I got up that morning at 5 o'clock to go up and meet them at the bus to give them a financial donation. As with a lot of older people, you know, I've got all these little health issues going on, and I didn't think I could sit on that trip that long. You know, when you get old, you get arthritis in your knees, so you can't do certain things. But I wanted to contribute. And when I got my car up there and I started asking for her, and they introduced me and I told her what I wanted to do, she just grabbed me and hugged me and took me to meet her husband. And she had four small kids going with her. I was amazed at the number of young people. I don't want to say children, teenagers, people much younger than I am, who were on that bus with her to go. And they all seemed fired up to make this trip and to see others who were of like mind to go with them.
Chris, she might have taken some exception to what you were saying about the young people. She seems to be a little, I'm talking about Leslie now. She seems a little more pessimistic maybe than you.
Well, I think my experience is that younger people, if they get information about the movement. For example, Karen Kalish in St. Louis has a program where she works with African-American kids and Jewish kids, and she actually has a very active program introducing students to the civil rights movement and committing them to a year of activity linked to what they've done. So I think it is inspiring. It's an inspiring story if you get into it, but you've got to have somebody running interference for you.
You're talking about Karen's cultural leadership program.
Absolutely.
Which is, we've done many programs with her on that.
Yes.
Here. I want to bring another voice into the conversation here. Dr. Hulda Blamenville also attended the march 50 years ago. She's been practicing medicine in St. Louis for about 40 years now. She was active in the civil rights movement and was even arrested in Selma, Alabama, a civil rights hotspot, of course, in the 60s. She's also a member of President Obama's Committee on Disparity and Minority Health Care. Dr. Blamenville, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
I'm going to back up a little bit. We've covered this with the guests in studio somewhat, but I want to ask you about your memory of that day 50 years ago.
Well, I'm originally from New York, and I left New York in a bus, and we went on down. I don't know if folks remember CORE, the Congress of Racial Equality.
Yeah, we've talked about that here earlier in the program.
Yeah, and so they had organized, along with other groups, a bus. We went on down to the March on Washington, and it was something that was really spectacular. I was one of those people, back in the day, as you said, I ended up spending in jail twice. One was in Selma, and another one was after I had become a physician, and my first job was to, since I was all involved in the civil rights, was to go on over and help our brothers and sisters who were emerging in Africa. And here I was, leaving the United States, having trained in surgery and whatnot at Mount Sinai in New York, on my way to Africa, and I was stopped and put in jail again in the airport in Nairobi because they were looking for Angela Davis. And all of us wore the froze, and they couldn't tell us apart. But anyway, I didn't spend much time in the jail because I had a friend who was working at the embassy, and they came down and said, no, her passport is right. Going back to that particular day, and I listened to you talking about the youth, and right now I'm practicing pediatrics, and I go and do a lot of volunteer work in the schools and in shelters and juvenile detention home. and I find out one thing, the kids or the young people are not educated. I think that that march and what went on is part of all of our history, but it's never touched, or very little is touched about the civil rights movement in our schools. And I think that that is doing everyone a great disservice, because now, as someone said, the kids would respond if they were educated about it, if someone actually told them. I know that I was very fortunate because I am a first-generation American, and I have a grandmother. I don't know if you remember, if some of the folks remember Marcus Garvey, and I have pictures. Oh, yes.
Yeah, we all remember.
I have pictures of my grandmother all dressed up following Marcus Garvey when he was going through. So I grew up in all of this, so it was part and parcel of me to be ripping and running down to Mississippi, down to Selma, Alabama, sitting at lunch counters all over Nashville and other places. This was part of what I was supposed to be doing, and I really, really, really wish that, again, going back to our churches, our schools, we need to educate the kids or the young people about what went on, why we did it, and what they need to do. They would become a lot more involved, and I think that we would move ahead a whole lot faster if we could actually get them to understand what was going on.
And that's why I brought up the young people. It's, I think everybody agrees it's so important that if any momentum is going to be continued, it's going to have to be continued by the coming generation.
Right.
Hang on for just a second, Doctor. I understand that you can stay with us for the rest of the program, and we appreciate that. Let's listen once again to Martin Luther King.
When we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
Dr. Martin Luther King, 50 years ago today, almost to the moment. We'll be back to continue our conversation in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We'll be continuing our conversation with Billy Morrison, a retired teacher who attended the March on Washington 50 years ago. I think I said Billy Washington. I meant Billy Morrison, I beg your pardon. Dr. Hulda Blamaville is with us by phone. She also attended the march. And Chris Hexter is with us. He is a local attorney who has been actively involved in the civil rights movement since day one, I think, certainly back to the 60s. But before we continue the conversation, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following. A commission in St. Louis City that deals with tax incentives for development held a hearing about the Northside Redevelopment Project, which is spearheaded by Paul McKee. Missouri Governor Jay Nixon visited Boeing, where he highlighted Missouri Works, a new strategy to support economic growth and create jobs. And at this hour at the state capitol in Jefferson City, there is a commemoration of the March on Washington. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. I'll ask each of you the same question. We alluded to it in a conversation during the break. Dr. Blamaville, I'll start with you. Give me some sense of what you feel when you hear that speech or parts of the speech, as you just did, the famous I Have a Dream speech.
What I feel, it sends chills down my spine. It brings back so many memories of that day in Washington. It brings back so many memories of the movement. It brings back the fervor that everybody had, all of us had that were involved in it, all of the participants had at that particular point in time. And you can't imagine it. At 2 o'clock today, I've told all of the ministers that I know of, and I know it's supposed to be, to ring that bell, because that was a time that all of us, black, white, pink, green, we all should remember that moment.
While you say that, I have a note here that the bells at Christ Church Cathedral, including the largest bell in the state of Missouri, will be among those ringing at 2 o'clock this afternoon. So we're certainly a part of it here. Chris, I'll turn to you because the doctor used the word, it sent a chill, and that's exactly the phrase that you used during the break.
Yeah, I can remember just watching that speech, and then I've watched it and heard it many times since then, and every time I'm just awed by it. I mean, he had a cadence, he had a way with words that just moved people. So yes, I mean, it almost makes me tear up. And you realize how young he was. I mean, what a tragedy to lose a man at such an early age. So yeah, I used the word chills up my spine. So.
And Billy, a similar kind of feeling. You're only 14 years old. Did you have any sense that part of the speech was so extraordinary?
You know, when I heard it, it just reminded me of the various ministers I used to hear. My mother did civil rights work, as I told you, and we would go to various churches, and you'd hear that same rhythm. But I think the words at the time, you know, when he talks about having this dream, and, you know, I remember looking around as I heard it at all of the people that were there, all the buses that were there, and we were all there, hopefully, to feel that dream. And it still gets to me.
Yeah, it does to everyone. I'd like to bring some of our listeners into the conversation here. Many have waited patiently since the outset. And let's bring in Elsie calling from St. Louis. Elsie, go ahead. You're on the air. Are you there?
No? Yes, I am.
Go ahead, please.
All right. First, thanks for making a point to pay homage to those St. Louisans who participated in the march and the civil rights movement.
Sure.
My grandfather actually went to the Selma to Montgomery march. And as the story goes, you know, he received numerous death threats, and his business sort of suffered from it. And through his example, that story and that struggle is still very much alive for my cousins and myself. He actually set up a foundation for a family to never forget, to keep fighting. But I don't see it very much amongst my peers. And I think it's because, you know, we don't see it, we don't live it. And people say education is the answer, but how can we really know without having, how can we not forget?
Well, that is certainly a key question. Does anyone want to respond to Elsie's comments there?
Well, I think Elsie's addressing things are just more complex today. I mean, how you move people, and it's not just in terms of civil rights, it's in terms of how do you create a movement that is tied to politics and get something. I think we have to remember that there was a specific purpose to the March on Washington. It was aimed at a specific piece of legislation, which Asa Philip Randolph called FEPC, Fair Employment Practices Act, FEPA. And it was tied to getting something specific. And now I think our specific goal has to be to unwind a Supreme Court decision. We've been given a mandate, and I think there are things we can do. And then in a broader way, I think we have to engage in stuff, the tough work of working with children, working in education, working in moving people to a point where they can take advantage of some of the gifts that American society offers.
Now, Dr. Blamaville, I wonder if today, I mean, obviously you were very active throughout this period. You had been to Selma and you'd been to many other places. I wonder if you think we could marshal the kind of forces that were out there in the 60s today, because there are still some things that need to be attended to.
And you're exactly right. There's an article this month in Essence magazine which addresses the covert or inconspicuous ways that things are handled nowadays. And the story goes, a professor went ahead and he came out, he as a professor at Harvard, a black professor at Harvard, came out, started up his car, and he was surrounded by the police. And he goes ahead and he tells a story about just because all he did was start up his car, and just because he was a black man and on the Harvard campus in the faculty parking lot, he was approached. And this is happening over and over again. I don't know, unless we actually educate all of the young people about this this idea that, you know, you look at a person and you make a decision. I'll also give one thing that happened. I have my clinic, and it is in North St. Louis, and I have had burglaries here. Now, when I'm reporting what's missing, not once, but at least twice, I was asked by the detectives, did you know the person who robbed you? And so this is going on, and that's why we've got to educate all the young people, not just the black children, black and white. They need to actually come online and learn that people are people. I think that this is what I got from the march 50 years ago, that we were all together on that bus that's going down there. It was black, white, Oriental. Everybody was there. We were all there for the same thing. And I've been in St. Louis now all of these years, and I know that there are places that I go to, and I know that there are places that other people can go to. And my son, who is a college graduate not too many years ago, he came home from school. And when he came home from school, he and a couple of his friends from school went down to eat in the Central West End. And they were approached by the police. What are you doing here? I live here. Somehow or other, we've got to get through to people that we are all the same, and we have to stop all of the stereotyping, because we're not going to actually have equality until people see other people as people.
Billy Morrison, as a teacher for all of your career, you know that much of the history involving black America is absent from the history books. But this march is not just black history, it's American history.
Right.
And
yes,
it too seems to get short shrift, has gotten short shrift over the last 50 years. We're talking about it today. Everybody's talking about it today. You can't turn on the radio or television without hearing about the march 50 years ago. But what about tomorrow?
And that's where we have a big problem. Many people know that many of the books that we use in school districts across the country are approved and come out of Texas. And if they don't like what's in it, it's taken out if you want to sell your book, if you want that approval. And school districts are going to have to stop, and they're going to have to stand up. You're going to have to get teachers like myself and others who are willing to speak up and say, you are missing a large segment of American history. No matter how you want to slice it, March on Washington, Jefferson Bank, wherever, Selma, Alabama, all of that is part of American history and needs to be there.
I'd like to bring in another listener. Eric in St. Louis has been waiting. Let's get his question or comment. Go ahead, Eric.
Yes, a great show. And St. Louis is so connected to this effort. There is a film that Denise Ward Brown at WashU just completed called Jim Crow to Barack Obama that the audience will have the opportunity to hear and see. It's been shown at the St. Louis Filmmakers Festival. It'll be shown again at the Black Film Festival and the St. Louis International Film Festival, also on HECTV. And it tells the great story of people from St. Louis experiencing firsthand the civil rights movement and then their feeling when Barack Obama is elected, and young people are involved in producing the show, so young people get this experience firsthand, and they go to interview Reverend Samuel Billy Kiles, who was on the balcony when Martin Luther King was shot. It's a great film that I think is great, and it was a great experience for the young people involved. Thanks for the great program.
Eric, and thank you for the call and alerting us to that particular film. I have one other clip from 50 years ago today that I'd like to play now, and we can wrap it up with some thoughts about that.
even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
Well, there we are once again. More chills, I'm sure, amongst all of us and everyone who listens to him and to his words. Just a couple of minutes left. That's the big question. I think the day we'll be left with, as well it should be, is the dream close to being realized? Doctor, let me start with you. Do you have any sense that we are very much closer today than we were 50 years ago?
We are partially there. We still have a long way to go. We still have a long way to go. Covert discrimination is there. It's not as blatant, but we have to get to the point, and I repeat that, where we see each other as people and not just that person by their ethnicity. And I think that we are out of the whole, I guess we're about a third there.
After 50 years. So 100 years from now, we'll be there, according to that calculus.
And I won't be here.
No, I don't think any of us will be. Perhaps to put the question a different way, Billy Morrison, in terms of how much of the dream has been realized, how far do you think we have to go? Would you agree with the doctor that we're only a third of the way there?
I agree with her. I don't know about the third, but we're only partially there. Anytime you can have a case like Trayvon Martin that showed up and let you know that it's not there yet because he was stereotyped. Anytime I can go somewhere and the people looking and turn around and look at me like I don't belong there, it's not there yet. I look at St. Louis Public Schools and think about what it used to be when at Nottingham, which is a very fine school at one time, they had no blacks in that school. And we were told they'd never have blacks there. And yet my brother was the first black to come out of that school. We've still got a long way to go.
All right. And Chris, I'll turn to you. I'm sure you've given this some thought.
I think it's a half-filled cup. And I tend to look at
half-filled. You're 50%.
Yeah, I think that we are very hard on St. Louis as a community. I mean, I think we have to remember, you know, like them or not, we have an African-American, we have a white mayor in St. Louis, and we have an African-American executive in St. Louis County. St. Louis County is not majority black. It's sort of an interesting phenomenon. We have lots of places in St. Louis now, I think, where African-Americans and whites can get together. I know that in 1963 that didn't exist. I'm not saying it's perfect. In a lot of ways, it's not. But I tend to think that if you're in a movement, you better think about where you were and where you're going. Because if you always look at the downside, you're not going to have a movement. So I tend to look – I'm an optimist. And I tend to think in terms of where the gains are. I mean, you walk into banks in St. Louis. Remember, in 1963, there were zero black employees above the level of custodian. I know when I go to the bank where I work, where I do business, there is quite high up on the officers of the bank, African Americans. That's a difference. And that came because people busted their buns to make that change. So I'm an optimist about this.
I'm going to have to leave it at that point. I want to thank you so much all for being with us on this anniversary of the famous March on Washington and the I Have a Dream speech from Dr. Martin Luther King. Billy Morrison, you were there. Thank you for being with us. Dr. Blamaville, also there. Thank you for spending some time with us and sharing your thoughts. And Chris Hexter, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Great to talk to you all. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with St. Louis native Jack Dorsey. He is the co-founder of Twitter and Square, and he's launching a new effort to connect small businesses and strengthen communities right here in St. Louis, too. What's your favorite small or local business in St. Louis? Tell us in 140 characters or less, of course. That's tweet us at STL on Air. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.